This is PCJ Radio. Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. They say that the world's finest saffron, that most precious of all spices, grows right here where I am. I am in the small village, a very tiny village of Mund, M-U-N-D, which is above the town of Brieg, in German-speaking Upper Canton Valley. This is the gateway to the Simplon Pass. Italy is only a few miles away as the crow flies. But here, in this little village, which cannot even be seen from Brieg, you have to know that it's there, in a few small parcels of land, grows the finest saffron in the world. And with me is an expert, a leading authority, recognized expert on saffron. That's Dr. Jürgen Rohmeder, who's originally from Munich in southern Germany, but has lived here in this area right next door to Mund for many, many years. And he produces a product. In addition to knowing a lot about saffron, he produces a product. Some would call it a liqueur, some would call it an aperitif. It's a drink made of the saffron, which only comes from this particular village. It's called Munder Gold, or the Gold of Mund. Dr. Rohmeder, welcome to Switzerland in Sound. First of all, I'm very curious. To my knowledge, Switzerland is not a classic a saffron-producing country. In fact, as far as I know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, saffron does not grow anywhere else but here in Mund. How did it get here in the first place?
We have evidence that the saffron came here by the latest in the 14th century from Spain. And it came carried by pilgrims. The bulbs were bought there and planted in here, or one of those mercenaries who served in foreign armies.
And the Swiss were famous for serving in foreign armies.
Yes, very famous. And bringing back saffron bulbs, somebody might have noticed in Spain where the saffron grows, this is the same climate as here at the very local climate of Mund here in the valley. And they tried it. And now to the question, why does it grow here and nowhere else? First of all, it's the soil. It must be very poor in nitrogen. It must be what the farmer calls a bad land.
But it's perfect for saffron.
Perfect for saffron. It must be very dry, very powdery, very deep. And it's better if it grows on steep hills because there's a forced mineralization with the water going through the ground. And second, it's the climate. The climate is probably the driest of all entire Switzerland. And it must be very cold in the winter and very hot in the summer, and that's what the altitude is good for.
And what is the altitude here, incidentally?
1,200, and all the other saffron areas in the world, Iran, Spain, Kashmir, are at that altitude.
Yeah. So it takes a lot of patience to cultivate this plant. Is this one of the reasons why it is the world's most expensive spice? Is it simply because it's so difficult to work with?
Well, number one, it's hard work on very steep fields.
It's all handwork, isn't it?
And all handwork, and the fields are very steep. You cannot apply any equipment. And the other reason is it takes 150 flowers to produce 1 gram.
That's incredible.
Yes, and they all have to be plucked individually, and the red filaments have to be pulled out individually by hand. There's no machine, and then it has to be dried. The drying is not any work at all, but it's all many, many hours.
I know your wife cultivates saffron, and she owns the largest parcels actually doing it. And I've seen the pictures we'll put up on the website here of part of the work sitting at the kitchen table or the dining room table working on these plants. It's just, it really is a labor of love. It requires incredible dedication.
Well, yes. In the evening, the family of the people of Mon, they sit around the table and do it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it goes late into the night if it was a good day, and sometimes it's only an hour.
Yeah. Now it's said, and I know that you are convinced this is true, that the saffron of Munt, this tiny village in Canton Valley, is the best saffron in the world. But what is your yardstick? How do you measure the quality of saffron? What are you referring to by the word quality?
Everybody can check that in his own kitchen. You need a small glass of water and a larger vessel of glass. And you powderize the saffron and dilute it 1 to 100. Again, you take one part and dilute it again, dilute it until the water is totally clear. And if you do this with saffron from Munt and other saffrons, then you find out that it takes more water with the saffron from Munt than with any other type of saffron.
So it's very concentrated then.
Yes, so that is evident that it's simply stronger.
What do we know about the medicinal properties of saffron historically, and even perhaps research work that's being done? You are a pharmacist, and we'll get onto your own product in a moment. But what do we know medically or pharmacologically about saffron?
There's many uses. Some of them are certainly not justified. Some might be. None of them is officially approved by any of the health authorities in the industrialized nation. But what impressed me personally most of all, I went to Iran, and there they use saffron after funerals in large amounts as added to black tea. And they say it compensates excessive sadness.
An antidepressant.
Yes, or you could also call it a short-term tranquilizer. Of course, I used it myself a lot, and you feel at a certain ease without getting tired. It's some sort of harmony, but there's no evidence.
It doesn't drug you, so to speak.
But I may not come up with a claim in terms of medication.
But for those who use it in other parts of the world, for them, they don't care what's proved scientifically. For them, it works. And I believe that you yourself are convinced that a lot of these stories are correct. The Romans were great users of saffron, weren't they?
Well, yes. And they, of course, they used it excessively.
Like everything else they
yes.
did.
And it started with Zeus on the Olympus, the mountain of Olympus. And the Romans, of course, particularly at the imperial court, used it excessively. And it was sprinkled on the way of the emperor. And it was
a sign of wealth, I guess.
Like incense, to give a good smell to the palaces.
That's all right when you have slaves doing all the work.
Right, and colonies where it grew and which you could exploit and simply take the saffron away and bring it to Rome.
Well, this brings us to Munter Gold, or Munt Gold, we would probably say in English, which is your beautiful golden saffron-colored liqueur, or aperitif, as it's legally defined. It's made only of the saffron produced here in the village. What is the idea behind the drink?
Well, it has its history. In Bavaria, in my pharmacy, we produced a liquor on the side, and it was artificially colored and decided to discontinue the product. It was not my philosophy. And then I got complaints, and people wanted it, so I promised if I ever find a natural colorant that would do the same job, then I would resume production. And I finally ended up with saffron, and then I discovered that more important than the color is the flavor. And then I started to play with the flavor and did a year and a half of experiment to find the right combination with other types of sugar and the right concentration of alcohol, with the one objective: unfold the saffron taste and make it a real saffron drink.
I have had the opportunity to taste Munt Gold, and it has a unique flavor. The closest thing that it reminds me of is one of the many Italian bitters which are taken to improve digestion or to increase the appetite. Would you agree with that? There is a bitter property about it, but it's a very pleasant bitter.
Yes, and actually there's two ways of using it, which I recommend. First, as an aperitif, you dilute it with the same amount of normal tap water, and then the taste of alcohol is completely gone. And what I cannot explain, but it's a fact, the saffron taste is then even stronger. And the other way is some people drink it ice cold. I drink it at room temperature at any time.
And as a digestive after meals, I guess?
Yes.
Because saffron, I believe, is known to help the digestion, correct?
Yes.
You have a new center here, we could call it, which is called the Saffronerie, which is French, meaning the place where you make saffron or process it. Now, can people come here to the Saffronerie and not only purchase the drink, but also sample it here?
Yes, but for the moment only for groups. And a group registers by telephone, gets an appointment, and then we perform the production live in front of the people. Not the entire production, but really the most interesting part of it.
Of it is secret, though, isn't it?
Yes, the quantity, but not the principle. The principle is published and public knowledge, and we show the most interesting part of it, where the colors change and where you really get the action, and then people have to fill their own bottles if they want to buy one, and then they get a special a label with a signature of one of us and their own name on it and the date as a souvenir.
And also culinary specialties. There are a couple of restaurants in town which serve saffron specialities.
There's the classical saffron risotto, and one restaurant has a wonderful saffron fondue, the famous Swiss cheese dish, but with saffron. And then there's a saffron ice cream.
And pasta too, I think, isn't there?
Pasta, saffron soups, and of course saffron, classical saffron noodles. And it's developing, and there's more and more saffron dishes added to the menus.
Now, saffron and Mund go hand in hand, but this is not a big industry. If anything, it's a cottage industry, very, very small scale, requires a great deal of dedication, as we know. But you do have a lot of people coming up here to look at the place. And I guess before or around the harvest time, it must be absolutely beautiful, all these violet flowers all over the place here. Very, very colorful indeed.
That's correct. And as is almost everywhere in agriculture, but selling the primary products, this is just absolutely not even carrying the cost. But with the secondary products, or with now the tourism unfolding around the saffron, it becomes interesting for Mund, and we're trying very hard to create experiences even for the tourist who comes outside of the harvest time in the summer. And that's why we're going to have a saffron museum, and we're going to have a saffron pass through the saffron fields where it's all explained, the botanic part of it. So people really go away from Mund with a good idea of saffron in their head.
Dr. Jürgen Rohmeder, an internationally recognized authority on saffron, a pharmacist, and the owner of the Saffronerie, where the special liqueur or aperitif called Munder Gold or Mund Gold is produced. A fascinating story. Saffron, the world's finest saffron, produced right here in tiny quantities in this tiny village of Mund above the town of Brieg in German-speaking Upper Canton Valley. Thank you so much indeed. There is a wonderful walk, which I usually take. Whenever I'm in Mund, I walk down diagonally down the mountain, stop at a grotto, a shrine grotto called Stein along the way, and then pick up the train back to Bern at a station called Lalden on the famous Höhenweg of the BLS Railroad. That's exactly what I'm going to do now. Thanks very much, Dr. Rohmeder.
According to the World Health Organization, psychosomatic conditions account for the majority of medical complaints in industrialized countries. These include bronchial asthma, heart irregularities, high blood pressure, stomach and intestinal disorders, depression, and anxiety, just to name a few. And at the bottom of these psychosomatic illnesses, we more often than not find stress. To combat this disease of modern civilization, as it's often called, tranquilizers are very often given. In fact, the Swiss-made product Valium has become the most prescribed medication in many industrialized countries. But there's been more and more interest over the years in finding an alternative, non-chemical means of controlling and even reducing and eliminating stress from the nervous system. We'll take a look at five of the leading systems which promise not only relief from stress, but practiced regularly, also a dramatic increase in the clarity of the mind. Mr. and Mrs. John Miller operate the Institute for Hypnotherapy in St. Gallen. They use hypnosis to teach their patients to relax and come to terms with everyday problems that can lead to severe stress. Through regular sessions, the patient learns how to perform self-hypnosis at home. This treatment is useful in cases of common fears or phobias, as well as in mild depressions. In addition to hypnotherapy, the Millers also teach the stress control techniques of autogenic training and biofeedback. Mrs. Miller told me about them.
Well, autogenic training is simply one method of achieving self-hypnosis. It's a training method that people can learn within about 6 to 8 weeks. They need 3 times a day, 1 to 2 minutes. That is very little time. And after 8 to 10 weeks, we could say they know how to do it. They learn to relax very, very deeply in a very short time. Within seconds, they can come from top stress to deep relaxation.
Well, how does the method work, basically?
First, you learn to relax your muscles. After that, your blood vessels. You learn to widen them so that the blood circulation is improved. Then you learn how to calm down your heart rate. After that, you learn how to influence your breathing rate. And after that, the intestinal organs are being relaxed. And in the end, then the head is made fresh and kind of awake, clear, yes. And after that, all of that is achieved, you can give yourself auto-suggestions. With small to medium problems, it usually is enough to help a person cure himself of minor problems. It takes a bit of self-discipline to do this in the beginning before you notice that it's starting to work. But in the end, this slowly develops over 6 to 8 weeks.
It's not hard work, in other words.
Not at all. In the contrary, it's a lot of fun.
There's another type of stress control technique, and it's called biofeedback. What is that? How does that differ from autogenic training?
It's totally different because it's a technical method. It takes instruments that measure certain bodily functions, and the machine tells you what's happening inside your body.
You get wired up, in other words.
More or less, yes. The machine tells you when it measures your muscle tension every half second whether the tension goes up or down, and you learn very, very quickly to relax a particular muscle, for example, or you learn very quickly to reduce the frequency of your heart, or the brainwave pattern you learn very quickly to change, and blood pressure to keep low, skin resistance to make it higher, which means when it is high, you're feeling very good and you're feeling very relaxed and calm. And there's very few body functions that cannot be measured and therefore influenced in that way, because you're immediately always told you're doing it right, you're doing it right, you're doing it wrong, watch out, now you're doing it right, etc. So you learn in one session, you can learn a lot about it. And what I like best about it is that it really proves that there is such a thing as psychosomatic problems, because when a person, for example, has a nervous heart condition, he can easily tell by measuring the tension in the breast muscle that it's really the tension in the breast muscle that causes this pain that he thinks comes from the heart. And as he relaxes, the pain goes away, and then it shows also on the monitor, of course, that the muscle has fewer microvolt electricity in it. You need the instruments for a limited time only, maybe 10 to 15 sessions at most, and then you know how it works and you never need the machine again.
Mrs. Therese Miller of the Institute for Hypnotherapy in St. Gallen in eastern Switzerland. Some years ago, the British pop group The Beatles made headlines by going to India to learn transcendental meditation under the yoga master Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Since then, TM, as it's called, has been taken up by not only film and recording stars, but by nearly a million ordinary people as well from many walks of life. Maharishi has made his TM headquarters at Salisburg in central Switzerland. There's a worldwide network of TM centers where the technique can be learned from teachers who studied at Salisburg. One of them is Alan Florence, who teaches TM in Australia.
Transcendental meditation is an extremely simple, natural, and effortless mental procedure that we practice for about 15 to 20 minutes, morning and evening. Just usually sitting comfortably in a chair with the eyes closed. And it does not involve any change in lifestyle, religion, belief, dress, anything like that. It's a very practical thing. It is completely effortless. Absolutely no control or manipulation at all. It's a completely effortless technique. And the effects it produces in both the mind and body are far more profound and widespread than from any other technique. When somebody practices the TM technique, they experience quieter levels of the thinking process until the mind transcends and experiences a state of complete silence, but a state of alertness, restful alertness we call it. Correspondingly, as the mind experiences this deep inner quietness, the body's activity settles down, metabolism is reduced to a level which is found to be at least twice as deep as sleep, and as a result of this extremely profound state of rest, mind and body come out completely refreshed. What we do in the TM technique is just simply utilize the nature of the mind, which is to experience a more expanded and more fulfilled state. It's an analogy that we can use is it's like there's two ways to get a dog to come to your door. One way is to run after him, chase around, jump on top of him, and drag him back to your door and then chain him up and he'll be there. The other way is to simply put some food outside your door and you'll find that the dog is always there. In the TM technique, we show the mind where complete and lasting happiness can be found.
How does this manifest in a physical sense?
The heartbeat is reduced, the breath rate is reduced, metabolism goes down dramatically, skin resistance increases dramatically. All the physiological and psychological parameters of deep rest show an extremely dramatic change within a few minutes of practicing the technique. And what we find is that with a cumulative practice of the TM technique, all these indications, physical as well as mental indications of stress and anxiety, are reduced permanently. People who practice the TM technique over a prolonged period of time actually become younger physically. Their biological age becomes younger than their chronological age. And this finding has now been well documented by many studies in different countries of the world.
Alan Florence, a teacher of transcendental meditation in Australia, currently in residence in Switzerland. The TM technique and autogenic training have their roots in the practice of yoga. Actually, there are several forms of this Eastern philosophy of health and living. The one which is perhaps most common in the West is called Hatha Yoga. This is the form which makes use of physical postures or asanas. At the center of this form of yoga is the importance of breathing and cleansing the body internally. Through this regular practice, the body and mind are said to take on a new strength and clarity. A result is a virtual immunity of the body against stress. There are also two important postures, or asanas, which Hatha Yoga uses to calm the nervous system. Here's Gerhard Fitze, a Hatha yoga teacher in Bern.
Number one posture is pranayama. Pranayama, this is a breathing exercise. A second exercise or asana is a headstand or shoulder stand, any inverted posture with the pranayama or the breathing technique of yoga. We have a direct influence on the nervous system and we can control our mind directly and sometimes instantaneously. During inverted postures, mainly in the headstand, which is called the king of all the yoga postures, the blood circulation is inverted and therefore the kidneys get rid of all toxic substances, and of course if we stay in it for a couple of minutes we will get great benefit of it.
And although it's not necessary, I suppose, to exaggerate this aspect of yoga, what you eat is very important as far as you're concerned.
Yes, that's right. We say that we have to eat whole wheat, food which has not been refined, and very little sugar or non-sugar, of course, if you can, not much meat. And this, again, coming back to stress, has a long-term effect on stress. So you can ruin your nervous cells or fibers by eating wrong.
Yoga is complex, and of course it takes years to be really accomplished at it, but can one, for example, in the space of a few months, learn enough yoga to make it effective?
I would say yoga is a way of life, so whenever you start, it doesn't matter in which age, as from then on, it's a way of life for you. So you have to be persistent in reaching that goal you are striving for. If it is relieving stress, you have to practice, as I said, pranayama, breathing technique, which you certainly cannot learn within a few months. But you can learn the technique within a few weeks, and you have to practice very regularly on that and try to improve, and you feel, after a few months, you should feel a result.
And do you often find that people who start out with specific techniques like autogenic training, like, for example, transcendental meditation, gradually go over to yoga sometime in the future?
Yes, this is exactly my experience. They somehow have their roots in yoga. This is a relaxation part of yoga, modified for the Western people, and it is a part of yoga in this case. It is still a part, and it is not a whole system. I don't blame them, but it is actually an improvement for them to find that they have been practicing an isolated technique, and they find that something else belongs to it, and so they find their way to yoga, and mainly here in the West, to Hatha yoga.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.